You're listening to Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, featuring Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President of Public Policy at the Dr. James Dobson Family Institute. And now, here's Gary.
Hi, this is Gary Bauer, Senior Vice President for Public Policy at the James Dobson Family Institute. Welcome to our weekly podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. Well, I'm pleased that we have today our old friend Tom Rose. Tom has been on the show with us a couple of times, reporting from Israel during the horrific war going on between Israel and Hamas, one of the world's leading terrorist organizations. Tom was a foreign policy advisor in the Trump White House. He was the publisher and CEO of the Jerusalem Post for a number of years. He wrote a best-selling book titled The Big Miracle, which was made into a movie by the same name. I recommend it to you. Tom is an articulate advocate of the Alliance of Christians and Jews in defense of Judeo-Christian civilization. Tom, it's great to have you on the podcast as always, and I want to talk to you about some of the, quite frankly, troubling developments taking place right now in Washington, D.C., to the detriment of our friends in Israel.
Well, it's a pleasure to be with you, Gary, and all the folks at the James Dobson Institute. Actually, your original number was right. About 230,000 Israelis are being housed, lodged away from their homes. The Israeli government has allowed people who voluntarily want to return to their homes in the Western Negev, which is the area that was so viciously and brutally attacked on October 7, communities utterly destroyed. They're virtually empty. In the north, which was never thought to be kind of a front line, that's the breadbasket of the country. You've been to the Galilee. It's beautiful and green. That area is largely denuded of people. Militarily, on the ground, the IDF is doing extraordinarily well. They really are. Despite the defeatism that you read every day in the newspapers and all the so-called armchair generals at liberal think tanks saying that Israel can't do this or can't do that, it's been a remarkably successful military campaign in Gaza. You got to remember, first of all, as you well know, Gary, urban warfare is the worst of all kinds of warfares. When you combine that with a warren of multi-billion dollar tunnels that are more extensive and longer in length than the London subway system, you begin to get a sense of how difficult and complicated this operation has been. Nonetheless, the IDF estimates that about 20,000 Hamas terrorists have been killed. They estimate that the Hamas military wing has 30 to 40,000 active members. So they haven't killed everybody, but they've killed approaching half, and they've done so, as tragic as the Israeli casualties are, they've done so with a minimal number of Israeli soldiers killed. So you'll never read this in the New York Times or the Washington Post, but inside Israel, folks are more than pleasantly surprised. Obviously, they're grieving for lost loved ones.
Of course.
And there's no replacement or solace or comfort for those bereaved families. But the operation, the campaign on the ground is going far, far better than you'll read about in most American newspapers.
Tom, you know, there's this constant drumbeat now, and Biden is citing it, President Biden is citing it as an excuse for him appearing, not appearing, I think it's very clear, he seems to be moving away from Israel, but there's this constant drumbeat about civilian casualties in Gaza. Well, the reason there are civilian casualties is that in violation of normal decency and international law, Hamas, just like Hezbollah, just like other enemies the United States has faced before and Israel has faced, they put their military equipment, their assets, in the middle of civilian areas. When that happens, it's not the wronged party, which is Israel here, that is violating international law. It's Hamas. Can you explain what the Israelis have been finding about where weapons have been put and that some of the tunnels have been found, how even ambulances are used to ferry weapons, hospitals used to hide Hamas fighters.
UNRWA, which is this phony, farcical, pro-Hamas adjunct of the United Nations Works and Relief Agency, that people think of as a UN agency. In fact, it's a Palestinian Hamas agency. The employees of UNRWA are all Palestinian. They're not blue-hatted volunteers from around the world. It's a Palestinian agency. Just the other day, under UNRWA headquarters were found massive tunnel nodes, power from the UNRWA headquarters, electrical power, utilities, water, communications, patched from UNRWA through the tunnel network, the warren of tunnels. So UNRWA is not simply not acting against Hamas, they are Hamas. Most of the homes, the private homes that the IDF has been compelled or forced to seize in search of either human terrorists or weapons of war, almost every home they enter, Gary, they find weapons, whether it's RPGs or homemade IED factories, small arms, grenades, grenade launchers, machine guns, ammunition. Almost every home they enter, they find this. This isn't simply Hamas committing a war crime in its targeting of Israeli civilians. They seek to kill Israeli civilians. It's a double war crime insofar as while they're attempting to target Israeli civilians for death, they expose their own civilians for death. It's a heads I win, tails you lose proposition for them in the battle for quote unquote world public opinion, because no matter what they do, civilians get killed. And that serves, sadistically, that serves the purpose of Hamas.
Well, Tom, in recent days, there have been obviously intentional leaks to the Washington Post and other news outlets from the White House. One of them was that the White House appears to have wanted this to get out, that the president is so angry at Prime Minister Netanyahu that he rails against him, curses him to the White House staff because he's upset that Netanyahu won't do what the president tells him in how to conduct the war. And then just in the last day or so, a front page Washington Post story indicating that, in fact, I think the headline was Biden moving closer than ever to breach with Netanyahu over war in Gaza. Tom, I know the Prime Minister Netanyahu has got some problems in the polls. He's been around for a long time. Plus, you know, he'll have to take responsibility for the fact that the attack took place. But his tough position, that most Israelis, from everything I know, want him to fight until Hamas is destroyed. It sounds at the White House like they think Netanyahu's taking a position that most Israelis don't want. In fact, that most Israelis would like a Palestinian state carved out of Israel.
There was a headline in your favorite newspaper, the New York Times, the other day that Netanyahu is rebuffing Biden because he's more concerned about domestic concerns. Well, yeah, the domestic concern of survival, of not being annihilated. And there's always the notion that Netanyahu is having to cave to his far right, when in fact, if you look at the Israeli political leadership from all spectrums, there's very little daylight. If Benjamin Netanyahu were replaced today, Israeli policy would not change one iota. It wouldn't have the statesman, it wouldn't have the grand visionary, but day-to-day policy would not change. It is wall to, as many Israelis believe Hamas must be crushed as do Americans who think that Biden is too old to be president. There's an interesting thing happening that I don't think is getting much attention. Got to remember, in the Middle East, they thrive on conspiracy theories. They absolutely love conspiracy theories. So in Western eyes, when you and I look at it, Gary, when we see all the things that Biden is doing to create distance between Israel and the United States to try to isolate Israel, in the Middle East, the theme is growing that Biden is actually conspiring with Netanyahu to encourage Hamas to keep its demands so unrealistically high that Israel will be able to continue to destroy it. Why? Because no country in the Middle East wants Hamas to survive. They don't have the political strength to be able to come out and say that. But Egypt wants Hamas destroyed. The King of Jordan, who was in Washington this week, wants Hamas destroyed. The Saudis certainly want Hamas destroyed. Hamas is a cancer inside the Arab body politic. They all know that. They all get it. The only one who seems to be wanting to defend Hamas or at least protect them is Joe Biden.
Yeah, it is. It's very frustrating, Tom, because the American people, more than most Western countries, are overwhelmingly pro-Israel. Tom, a lot of folks still don't understand this. This isn't just a radical Islamist Jewish thing. I mean, Hamas has said repeatedly, and it gets very little play, as you know, in American newspapers, that they want to destroy both the Jews and the Christians. And they don't want a two-state solution. They don't want a Hamas-run nation living side by side in peace with Israel. They want to replace Israel as the only nation in the region. Talk about that a little bit. When Israel is fighting Hamas, they're fighting the fight of the United States because this is an enemy that wants to get rid of us.
They represent the extremist Islamist vision, view, goal of establishing a global Islamic caliphate. They're not simply satisfied with the murder of every Jew, which they openly call for in their 1988 charter. Jews are sons of pigs, and Christians are sons of apes. That's how they view it. That's in their charter. And that's why this notion that somehow the Israel-Hamas war is not a problem for Americans to concern themselves with, we see in America what Hamas and their supporters want. That's why they attack the Rockefeller Center Christmas tree lighting ceremony. That's why they interrupt Carnegie Hall performances of The Messiah. That's why they trash and attempt to delegitimize Christians and Christianity. They view Christianity as the rotten fruit that fell from the Jewish tree. That's their language. That's their own language. And that's why this whole notion of ceasefire means more than simply Hamas wins. It means Hamas will get away with mass murder. It means Israel can't restore peace on its borders. With all the talk about all the Palestinians who've had to flee their homes, you and I alluded to this earlier in the show, about a quarter of a million Israelis are out of their homes. A ceasefire means nothing less than death for the state of Israel, literally. Not necessarily tomorrow, not next week, or not next year. It means that Hamas will survive to live another day. And in the Arab world, that's what matters. Who wins and who loses, which is why a Hamas total and utter destruction is essential for any hope of peace in the region, particularly since all the Arab states are as determined behind closed doors, unfortunately not publicly, as determined and committed as Israel to see Hamas utterly wiped out. That's what I think is truly unique about this moment. 5 months into this war, there have been no Arab League condemnations of Israel. There have been no Arab states with relationships with Israel that have severed or even threatened to sever relationships. There have been no sanctions imposed. They want this and need this and recognize how important total victory for Israel is because it means victory for them and victory for Judeo-Christian civilization until the next enemy raises its head to destroy us.
Well put, Tom. Look, I'm not sure our audience understands completely how well connected you are, not only here in the United States, you know, in the conservative movement, and for years you've worked closely with the Christian community on a number of issues, but you're very well connected in Israel. You're the former editor of the Jerusalem Post. You know the prime minister and the prime minister before him and the prime minister before him. As you know, Tom, Christians in the United States pray for Israel. Millions of us do. A lot of Christians are sending aid to the IDF. Christians have made it a point of going to Israel right now to encourage the Jewish people. Many pastors speak from the pulpit about the importance of Christians blessing the Jewish people and the nation of Israel. At the James Dobson Family Institute, we are strongly in favor of the U.S.-Israel alliance, and we believe deeply that that the Israeli people and the American people, the Jews and Christians, are connected, that our faith does spring out of your faith. So having said all that, can you give us a little bit of a sense of what the love of Christians in America, how that is perceived in Israel, and what it means to the government of Israel and the Israeli people at a time like this?
It can't be overstated. I can't tell you how absolutely vital Christian support for the state of Israel and the Jewish people is and has been. And I'll also say that of the millions of committed, devoted, passionate, evangelical Christians who support Israel, none has been more stalwart, more persistent, more unequivocal, more outspoken, more utterly and completely loyal and dedicated than one Gary Lee Bauer. I had a, I don't know whether we're allowed to joke on this, but you indicated some of my connections. I was in Israel a couple of weeks back and had the great honor of spending a Shabbat meal, a Sabbath evening meal, with one of the personages you recently cited, the Prime Minister, who is a huge Gary Bauer fan. And we were talking about you, Gary, and the Prime Minister, who has a great sense of humor, not that you'll see that, but has a great sense of humor, says, and this is almost verbatim, that Gary's indispensable. But please give Gary the following message for me, will you? I said, absolutely, sir. I'd be honored. He said, you know, we love Gary. He's phenomenal. We can't live without him. There are two kinds of Christian Zionists, those that stand unequivocally with the state of Israel, like Gary Bauer, and those Christian evangelical Zionist supporters of Israel who stand in Israel with us at this time. So, in other words, a message from the boss. He wants you to get over there.
I've been checking airfare as soon as you mentioned that to me the other day, Tom, and that the only excuse I have is that there's a battle going on in America to undercut America's traditional support for Israel. And I've been right in the middle of that, as have JDFI and many others. And this might be one of those cases where cloning would be a necessity, even though we've got some moral questions about it. But at any rate, thank you for sharing that. When you're back there, and I'm sure you're going back soon, let the Prime Minister and the Israeli government and the Israeli people know that whatever they're reading in their liberal media, the United States remains the most pro-Israel nation in the Western world. And one of the reasons for that is that American Christians have read their Bible and they believe the word of God. We know about the meeting in the desert between God and Abram, and we understand what the verse means. I will be your God, you will be my people. He who blesses you, I will bless. He who curses you, I will curse. And we take that as a direct declarative sentence from God that he wants us as Christians to stand with our Jewish brothers and sisters.
Amen. Amen. I will do that. And it will bring unlimited solace. And it's a tremendous morale boost. There have been all kinds of Christian groups, fellowships that have been to Israel since the war started. I've spent most of the time in the last 5 months, frankly, in Israel, and just a couple of weeks back home in the States. And the media coverage they get is absolutely glowing. They're helping on farms. They're picking crops. They're working in hospitals. They're literally doing laundry for soldiers. It's incredible the goodness and the decency of Jesus-loving Christians and Israel-loving Christians. It's a miracle to behold.
Well, Tom, thank you very much for sharing your wisdom with us. Israel has some tough days ahead, and so does the United States. All of us should stay in prayer for our country and for the people of Israel as we confront terrorism and Islamic radicalism around the world. You've been listening to the James Dobson Family Institute's weekly podcast, Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom. I'm glad you were here with us, and be back next week.
Subscribe to Gary Bauer's Defending Faith, Family, and Freedom, where you find your favorite podcasts. Just hit the subscribe button to ensure you receive every episode.